Dieter and Hutch, we are also aggrieved and looking to leave our contracts. Let's start with that before we get into Shrine Bowl. You and I love the Shrine. We're big Fez heads. We love the Shrine Bowl. Big fan of the day three, and sometimes if you get saucy, day two picks that come out of the Shrine Bowl. Right. But it was so funny. The news alert came across my phone. I'm dropping off the kids' daycare, nannies, all that. And I get the news alert at a red light, and I look down and I go, oh, that's interesting. And then I received 45 text messages in a row, all of the same thing. And you, you should be happy to know, are a priority notification on my iPhone. And it was exactly what I expected it to say. It was exactly what I was thinking. The 49ers said, Jesus, take the wheel. We're not going to do anything, and we're going to let fate happen for us. And to be fair, nothing has actually happened. But my God, sometimes being lucky is better than being good, right?
Yeah, I mean, their whole strategy last offseason was solid or bust, and it worked.
Really quickly just remind people how absolutely boned they would have been had Robert Saleh taken the Jacksonville Jaguars job?
Well, I think they would have hired Brandon Staley because he was their only alternative.
How is that much different than our current Gus Bradley? So at least Brandon Staley has new ideas.
Their strategy is to bring in guys that they are familiar with and to say, all right, well, which is good, right? You bring in a guy as a backup plan, great. But instead of being sort of like really aggressive and proactive when they get the opportunity to, they go, well, we got a backup, so like, We'll be picky, which I think you should be picky, but you can also interview a lot of people and be picky, right?
Requires work. That's the problem.
Correct.
requires Kyle Shanahan. And oh my God.
I think very clearly it's setting up where it's going to be, all right, let's see if we can get Jim.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk to Raheem, and then what do we need? One other interview? Okay. I guess we'll do that at some point too. And
they can interview Reggie Bullocks, who they're trying to fire.
Daniel Bullocks?
Daniel Bullocks, apologies. Reggie Bullocks is a former NBA power forward.
Former. He was huge, right?
Yeah,
no. I'm thinking of the small forward. I was thinking of Reggie something, who used to play for the Nets, who had a bald head. And
You're going to have to be way more specific on power forwards on the Nets who played with a bald head. That's Derek Coleman territory, my friend.
Reggie Evans,
good player. Listen, let's again be very, very fundamentally clear. We are extrapolating. And Tom Pelissero, who is a good guy, good reporter, he is also extrapolating. He's saying, I would think they would have interest because no duh. reason that the 49ers are the team that comes to mind is because everyone else has handled their business, save for Arizona and Las Vegas. I'd imagine that Vegas would also be interesting.
By the way, just waiting a few weeks and then going, let's get rid of all our staff. Aaron Glenn, it's all good over there.
They're doing great. And Aaron Glenn clearly is in full control. Do you think Woody Johnson just realized that his football team was garbage and is like, we need to make some changes? Or do you think Aaron Glenn is so inept that he had to wait several weeks?
I think Woody Johnson has been treading water at the bottom of his pool because he's wearing that Sauce Gardner chain and it's a little too heavy and he's just trying to reach the surface. So he has no idea what's going on.
Well, we knew that already.
No one's trying to help him.
No, just let him drown. So the best case scenario here is that the 49ers luck, because the Browns are so Browns. There's not even a correct verb or adjective to describe. They're just the Browns. And everyone in America and perhaps the world knows what that's like. By the way, my Chargers fan daughter, who's amped about Mike McDaniel, perhaps charged up, if you will, she calls them orange helmets. The Browns are the orange helmets, and that's what I'm calling them from now. So the orange helmets.
Right. I gotta know, and I think the best thing that can come out of this for us is if Schwartz signs and we find out what the actual process. I mean, he's probably too aggrieved to talk about the process.
No, I'm asking him.
But I gotta know, like, what were the tests? What was involved in the process? And I think this sets up most logically for him to be so aggrieved and so absurdly mad that he leaves. He gets his way out. They let him out of the contract as he goes, I will tear this thing down from the inside if you force me to stay under my contract, or I'll quit. Or I'll quit and, you know, maybe I won't even be a defensive coordinator for a year. I'm not coming back.
Right.
Kyle Shanahan, knowing, by the way, probably sending him the PowerPoint that got him out of his
the PowerPoint from the Browns that Mike McDaniel wrote. Right. Don't forget that Kyle asked Mike McDaniel was Kyle's right-hand man. There's a little bit of weirdness there, but they are also very, you know, close. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on that, even though every now and again there's an old story about McDaniel being Shanahan's right-hand man where I'm like, that feels like a bit much. But Kyle had, I think it was 26 points. He had Mike McDaniel create a 26-point PowerPoint presentation on why he should be let out of his contract. Schwartz is under contract. The Browns technically employ him. Schwartz can also quit for 1 year. Schwartz can quit. Everyone's entitled to quit. I'm not sure if there's any sort of buyout language.
If there's like buyout language or draft compensation. I don't know how that works for coordinators and how that functions.
I'm still a little bit with my head spinning, and this is that part of the world, on how Kyle Whittingham retired at Utah and then took the job at Michigan. And the answer is that Utah actually pushed him out. I got to the bottom of that, but it still is like, you quit. So now there's no buyout.
Right.
And then you go to Michigan. So like, there's a way to do this that is, they can do this if they want to.
Kyle's
going to
capitalize on their mutual hatred of the Browns and being done wrong. And I think hey, no one has given me a harder time in my career than you. Right. I need you. Be my Steve Spagnuolo. Let us wage war on the NFL together.
Hand in hand. Saw how warm it was after that game. That game was cold and brisk, and they got together, and it was just, you could feel it. It was like heated rivalry, man. There was a palpable energy.
It is truly like a domino effect situation where... It's also like the Browns, how about like doing the thing where like no one wanted to, they interviewed so many interesting people and so many people were like, yeah, we're interested. And then like throughout the process, they all went, oh, fuck no. and they were like, we're going to force Jim Schwartz on you without like discernibly asking Jim Schwartz, who is like, no, I'm getting the job, right? It's me or who's even left?
Well, and like, he's obviously an avid watcher of our show because we're like, they got to hire Jim Schwartz, right? And I couldn't even remember Monken's name on Tuesday's stream or Monday's stream.
Getting confused with Greg Roman. I was like, Todd Monken and Greg Roman sort of occupy the same space with the Ravens and all that. I'm like,
too many Monkens. It is, let's just be clear about the standard here. Yes, the Browns have him under contract. I do not believe that this is in any way a barrier that would actually inhibit this from happening because he's aggrieved.
If it was a multi-year contract, it could be trickier, but it's 1 year left.
So, and by the way, the 49ers have the money, as they showed with Saleh. They have the money to say, okay, we not only can pay you top dollar, but we can also just buy out your final year. We can pay the Browns for your final year. We'll just give them the money that you were going to cost. So it's doable. That said, they also have to do it. They have to participate in the act of recruitment and procurement, which to this point, and I was joking with you last night, like either they're running the most buttoned up, tight, agents aren't leaking anything, DC search in the history of mankind, or... they're doing nothing because nothing has been reported.
Let's be clear. That might fly. I know there's a lot going on. Everyone is either at like the Shrine Bowl or Senior Bowl. This is the time of year where all of the agents and reporters are talking and all together. Like, you can't keep that totally silent. They, to this point, no one has reported an official defensive coordinator interview or even a request.
Right.
So
no requests.
It's been a week, more than a week since Saleh has been hired away.
And let's not forget that when the Salah situation as it played out there, I mean, you can go back on our streams with all 90 views. You could look and be like, are they waiting to see resolution there? Like, don't they want to have a backup plan? They're doing the exact same thing again. And this is giving them the benefit of the doubt of, well, let's see what happens with Schwartz in Cleveland and just wait that one out. And then we'll go about it, because I haven't heard about Raheem getting any love for DC. He might be well
very
served to take
there.
Take a year off. I do think that the Rams situation as it stood, it wouldn't shock me. I'm not reporting this. Don't aggregate me. Or actually aggregate me. That would be good for the show. I would imagine that he had a standing offer from McVay to come back as DC, should Chris Shula have gotten a job, which I suppose he still could. Doesn't look like he will. The whole thing is just, it's a little bit hubristic from the 49ers. Right.
There is the issue that, I mean, not necessarily an issue, but it is like a fundamental question of like, Schwartz ran the most cover one man in the league and very, very little cover four, cover six, a lot of what the Niners sort of relied on last year.
Right.
Now, the question, of course, would be, that's probably Schwartz's ideal. He built up the personnel to run that. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue in terms of like, would he want to sort of overhaul the roster a little bit and, you know, reimagine the scheme and try and replace players to get the 49ers to run that? Or would he bend a little, bring in some more cover six, cover four, some stuff they're familiar with? Or is it a question of like, actually the 49ers might have some of the dudes, it's just a different scheme that you have to install and, you know, run a little bit different. At the end of the day, though, he did run like a lot of cover three, so that element of it is still similar, but it is a lot more single high base than it is, you know, two shell.
That if you have the personnel to run single high, you should run single high. Like, I have no problem with running single high if you can. This team can't. And they did. They can't, but they did. Jim Schwartz has been in this league a long time. He is not an ideologue. He's pretty pragmatic. But if you can, as he did, he had the runway to build out a defense as he saw fit. And in the same way that Robert Saleh came in and wanted to run a defense that was very different than the last time we saw Robert Saleh. That's what he wanted to do. And he drafted players and, you know, acquired players that fit that mold. We're not talking about a deeply idiosyncratic scheme in that, like a McDonald or a Flores, where they're out there saying, okay, we need players that probably don't work anywhere else, but we can use them. The guys that they had in Cleveland, I mean, to a degree, they really work best in Cleveland, but they can work in other spots too. They made a lot of really shrewd trades, particularly that corner that they dumped Newsom and they bring in that corner from Jacksonville. Right. That worked very well. If the 49ers bring him in, I think he gets the same kind of reign that Bob got.
That's exactly where I was going with it.
But that's not to say that he gets it immediately and they, you know, I imagine there'd be moves, as there should be moves, on both sides of the ball this offseason, more than last offseason. I would imagine that he would have a good say over draft positioning. Why wouldn't he? Perhaps not to the same level Bob got it last year, because Bob had him over a barrel and basically, you know, somehow Kyle gave up roster control to John Lynch. And then through all of that, talk about a domino effect, gave up roster control to Robert Saleh, at least on one side or two sides of the ball. And then Kyle still had it for offense. He really worked himself in a corner. I think it can work just fine. There might be some growing pains. There might be, you know, don't forget, you know, the Ernest Jones trade that McDonald made with Seattle last year, like some in-season trades on, hey, we thought this could work. It isn't. Let's go get a guy who can work for our stuff. But it's not as if the Niners have this incredible, you know, locked in stone defense that can't be molded. There's going to be some questions about, can Upton Stout play a lot more man to man as opposed to zone? Does Diamador Lenore fit? But your linebackers are going to be fine for this scheme. I think your defensive line is a 1-to-1 because of the way that they played in Cleveland. And you were going to have serious questions at safety no matter what scheme you were playing, whether it was cover three or not. You were still playing single high, whether it was Gus or in a Jim Schwartz or a Raheem Morris. So, it's not as if this is not a malleable situation to begin with. And it's just now, if Because again, there's no guarantee that any of this materializes into anything. And I'm excluding the Browns aspect of this. Like, the Browns could be the easiest part. Getting him out of the facility in Cleveland might be the easiest part of all of this. But if it was Jim Schwartz, I just don't think it would be, it'd be an issue, but I don't think it would be a problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I also think there's the vision of, like, maybe Jim, like, Jim knows what he's doing. He's known how to attack Shanahan's own system. Let's give him the runway and know that, like, it might take some time, but second half of the year, when this thing is humming,
maybe
it's really going to be humming. Like, that's, I think you have to take a sort of wider perspective and say, like, it might be rough at the start of the year, first half, sort of adapting and overhauling. But at the same time, like, he still runs wide nine. Like, there's still that foundation. So that's not changing. And that's a pretty fundamental part of what they do. I think I think Schwartz is a guy who understands personnel and what your usage is and how you affect defenses depending on players with skill sets. And he's had corners who can play man coverage. And I think he will evaluate the 49ers corners and say, oh shit, Renardo Green can actually play man. Like, he actually might be a better fit in man. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Upton Stout seemed to flash some things. Do we need to move on from Lenore? Can he actually do it?
Yeah, they'd give Lenore a shot. There'd be no reason not to see if he can do it. And he might be great at it. He hasn't shown that so far, but, you know, put him in a different mind frame, maybe.
I would think the biggest area that they would look at if they brought in Schwartz would be safety. I think they would take a long look at spending on somebody and saying, all right, what is it about safety that's not working for us? And is it actually, and I think he would be able to, like, give Kyle a perspective on, like, yeah, like, Rob did the best with what he could do, but, like, that's not working. Like, this is not the future of safety. This is not the future of your defense. The future of your defense is getting Swiss Army knives and at least one guy who can sit up top and really delineate route distributions and how teams are trying to attack you and carry things vertically and let your better corners handle what they need to handle.
Yeah, and you'll have the ability. I always think more trade than free agency in this regard. Because, again, if you're asking for a player that does a certain thing with all the coaching changes that happen in the NFL year over year, you end up in a situation that's the inverse, typically, of what they have going on in San Francisco. Again, if any of this is to manifest, and we're probably way out over our skis on this one as it stands, but it's exciting because there's possibility there, and I think that we had all come to a point of resignation that the Niners were going to take the path of least resistance, and the defense, therefore, was going to be a path of least resistance in the upcoming season, which just limits your upside, especially in a campaign, I think, next year as it stands, and there's still a million points of action to be made for everybody. But the Niners should have as good of a shot as anybody going into next year. But with Gus Bradley, I just have a hard time betting on that upside with defensive coordinator. And it might end up where they just say, we'd rather have Gus than Jim Schwartz, but that in and of itself is a damning decision. And, you know, I've been asked a lot lately, like, what does Shanahan have to do to get onto the hot seat? Which is such a twisted way of looking at things, but, you know, I guess they come to negative Nancy Dieter for negative Nancy takes. And I would say he doesn't have to do anything. It's going to be plainly obvious, right? You lose back-to-back seasons with a quarterback making big money, you're out. And, you know, picking Gus Bradley would be, in my opinion, a pretty effective way to ensure one of those seasons comes to pass. So
I agree. I actually, and I think that was our initial reaction to that press conference, and may turn out to not matter or be an overreaction. I think there's sort of snobbiness on the wide net thing is a reasonable thing to harshly criticize. Totally. But I think our reaction was like, that could be the beginning of the end. If there was a way for it to go down wrong, it would be being extremely lazy in your defensive coordinator search, going with a guy with an outdated scheme, it not working, sticking with it too long, and then just sort of having no vision as your stars age out and you don't replace talent on the roster over 2 years.
And let's be clear about this. People were talking about Gus Bradley's defense being outdated when he was with the Chargers, much less with the Colts.
Right. And you can have, like, you can have a similar criticism of Raheem of having a similar scheme in that, you know, his defenses have never graded out that highly. I think that's a reasonable criticism, but you'd also say Raheem, if only the way people talk about him is at a different level and is viewed as a very, very intelligent modern defensive coordinator, even if he's running very similar stuff.
He tries stuff, though, and that's the difference between him and Gus Bradley. He's willing to dial it up. Atlanta didn't have the defensive personnel this last year, but for the first 6-7 weeks of the season, they looked like, you know, dudes with their hair on fire because, and to be fair, this is Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, but Raheem's a defensive-minded coach. He has say on this stuff. They were blitzing like crazy. They were coming at all angles. They were fast and aggressive. The book got out on them. Kyle basically wrote the pamphlet and disseminated it to the entire league in that Week 7 game, and then they got burned. But at least they were trying. So those are errors of commission as opposed to errors of omission. And I'll always go for errors of commission in the same way that we were lauding Bob early in the season for trying stuff. Was it working great? I mean, early, then the book gets out, injuries happen. Then it started to fade, and then he stopped trying stuff. Like, you got to keep trying stuff. You have to keep keep the defense on the offense on the back foot. With your, when you're a defense in the modern NFL, you have to keep offenses on the back foot. And at a certain point, the Niners went to bend but don't break. And it's just not a philosophy that I agree with at all. Because you're going to break.
Because regardless. What happens is you break anyway. You just break anyway. And you go, oh, well, shit.
Damn. Well, good thing we did all that bending. Like, and by the way, when you constantly are bending something, it deteriorates in the middle. And then it's more easy to break down the line. And I think you can make the argument that's what happened to the 49ers.
Before we get into the Shrine Bowl. Do you want to talk about the Belichick vote very, very, very briefly or not? I feel like there's been a lot of discourse online about it. It's all been pretty...
You know, I love discourse online.
Here's the thing. I think it's... I think what people are missing is that the voting system is clearly like a is to blame for a lot of it, and Bill Polian is to blame for a lot of it. Because people are like, oh, well, Bill's going to get enough votes. This other guy, like, that's probably what happened. Right, is people are like, well, the system, I can only vote for so many people. Like, I want to make sure, you know, I think Roger Craig is part of the group, right? I want to make sure Roger Craig gets in or something like that. And so you go, well, everyone's going to vote for Bill. So that's, I think, where some of it comes from. I think the Bill Polian thing is a whole different animal. That said, kind of funny, not the right thing to do, but like just from like Boston media personalities getting pretty mad. I think that's entertaining. Is it the right choice? Should people be holding Bill Belichick out of the Hall of Fame as a first ballot Hall of Famer? No, clearly the wrong choice. Clearly insane. But is it a little funny?
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny. It won't be funny if it happens again next year or the year.
Agreed.
Like, the whole thing is people getting drunk on power and then this moral grandstanding of, oh, we have to protect the integrity of the game. No, you're trying to get in a pot shot. That's fine. But I, as we've seen with Barry Bonds, like, where's the logical limit on stuff like this?
No.
Because once you've established the moral grandstanding angle, it's hard to come off of the high horse. It just is. And I don't give a shit. I want to be blunt about this. Like, I have never been, I haven't been to Springfield, but I've been to the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. I've not been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Hamilton, Ontario, stand up. But the whole thing all of these halls of fames are just, they're Gus Bradley defenses. They're kind of outdated. And it was cool when we didn't live in an age of information and they were good museums. I still think there's a lot of great places for museums, but like, I love going to art museums. I love going to natural. Like, I love that stuff. Football museums, it would be cool if it wasn't run by people.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. There's just a mustiness to them. And to be clear, like, I think it's funny because, like, I can't, if I had the opportunity to vote, I can't fucking fathom not writing Belichick as a first ballot, like, regardless of any context whatsoever.
So there have been, what, six?
To put him down.
There have been 60 Super Bowls. This is the 60th Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick has won
more than a tenth.
He's six is a head coach, two more as a DC.
Yeah.
He's won 8 of 60.
It's a pretty good number.
What are we talking about? You know, the only way this would be funny, like, because right now it's just like embarrassing, frankly, for everybody.
And there's
involved.
Like the witch hunt to find the 11 people.
Let him have it. I'm more interested in how Giannis doesn't end up on the Warriors. But it's it'd be funny if, like, Marty Schottenheimer, who was the head coach of the Chiefs when I was in my formative years and a Chiefs fan in the Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson era, who just went 7-9 every year. And I remember my grandpa, my family's from Kansas. My grandpa telling me, like, because every we'd go to Christmas and I'd read the Kansas City Star and it would always be the Chiefs are going 7-9. My dad or my grandpa would be say, there's two things you can count on: tornadoes and Marty Schottenheimer going 7-9. That was Kansas logic back in the day. And it would be hilarious to me if he got into the Hall of Fame before Bill Belichick, the greatest football coach of all time.
Yeah.
How much do you think him being the North Carolina head coach impugns his candidacy?
I think it's less about the actual position and the girlfriend thing and people just in him being terse with the media and people having vendettas and all that. I think it's all stupid.
I love how Bill Polian's like, I don't remember if I voted for him. It's like, dude,
he's
you
like,
led
I definitely,
the insurrection.
That's crazy. I'm not sure. It's like,
I can't believe
buddy,
that happened.
You clearly didn't vote for him and you clearly whipped votes. You're the worst liar.
Come on now, Mitch McConnell. Get it together.
Real quick. I think we've hit 100 members of the channel. Have we done our ticker for the day?
Oh, that's a great idea, Jake. Thank you. We need to make sure that our favorite peoples in the whole wide world are right there. And I'm going to make new graphics to make this fit better. So we got to thank our guys, Kevin Wood, Goat Lord, MJG Harding. If y'all can get better screen names, if you can all do what I did.
Dieter is trouble of reading.
I never learned how. by the way, book recommendation. Time. We love to throw these in on the channel before we get into Senior Bowl stuff. Exiles, the book Exiles. It's like a Martian sci-fi thriller. Quick read. Knocked it out in like
love
5
that.
Hours. Really enjoyable.
Dieter
Exiles.
Also gave me a book on cannibalism. Not about how, but it was a fictional book.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty horrifying.
Pretty good. Pretty horrifying. Couldn't put it down. It was a weird book. Yeah. That weird was a good book. One. I'm on 6 books so far this year, so I'm trying to get to like.
I'm on 2 right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to 52. This year, that's my overall goal, and
I'm about half of that.
I'll have a list at the end.
Stay literate, folks. Also, stay literate in the NFL draft. That's our transition to the Shrine Bowl.
No, we're transitioning with me shitting on Kevin's real name. No, sorry, Kevin. It's the rest of you with the numbers and such, which I understand. You can't all have cool names like Dieter Kurtenbach. Yikes.
That's right.
Okay.
Shrine
let's
Bowl?
Let's do Shrine Bowl. Where you want to talk about some names, by the way? Oh. A smorgasbord.
Guys.
We're talking about some guys here. Okay, let's start with my dudes.
Sure.
We're going to run through these, then we're going to watch some tape on these guys. Okay? So Shrine Bowl this year, I would say not as good as last year. Just
no.
To be blunt. But I thought the high-end stuff was very high-end. I thought that we got some guys who... It's a very limited group. I would say that there are 2 or 3 guys in this class that can talk themselves into an early day 2 pick, where when they showed up, they were definitely day 3 guys, right? Or not even on the board. I had to put in a couple guys in the spreadsheet. Let's start with the guy who I found to be most impressive. I'm sounding like Collinsworth here. Here's a guy. I thought James Thompson, and these are not in any particular ranking. They're just names.
Yeah, these are just... I'm just using graphics from last year, folks.
It's not a problem at all. These are Dieter's dudes. James Thompson, defensive tackle out of Illinois. I tried to stick to one-on-ones. Thank you to the East team for running the weirdest practices ever. The West team actually ran normal practices.
Yep.
I thought Thompson just flashed consistently. He's 6'5", 301 pounds. You know, doing a little backstory on this guy. This is somebody who had a lot of buzz at Wisconsin. He tears his pec, transfers to Illinois, never really got it going. But we talk a lot about Kyle doing a bad job and recognizing the programs that can help transition players to the pros faster for his team and his style, particularly on offense. I do think Illinois does a great job of having a lot of pro-style stuff, and Burt Bielma does a really good job in general of finding guys that are more pro-ready than maybe college game-level players, yep. And you know what I mean there. I thought Thompson just looked really, really good. We're talking about a three technique who can play the five, probably a tight front end in all likelihood, that one and a half gap system. But I thought Thompson, every time he went up, and he went up against some pretty good offensive linemen in the West practices. I like the West offensive line more than the East, though I picked two East guys for my team. just overall, I thought that he was the standout by far on the defensive line. Let's go to one of your guys.
So Jalen Gilboe out of Texas. It was interesting. He had some good battles with number four on my list, Caden Wettjen, who my God. Don't know, best returner in the nation?
Unquestionably. Right? I love the kid out of BYU. I don't believe he's coming out. But Wettjen is how it's pronounced, by the way. You might remember, forgive me, Cooper DeJean was an incredible returner for Iowa. This guy is levels better than Cooper DeJean as a returner. Wettjen was the best player at the Shrine Bowl. Full stop.
He just played at a different, clearly a different speed than everybody else.
We'll
show
you.
I think he's going to run like a sub-4.3. Like it's possible.
He is. I do not believe he's a day one player. Okay, because of the specs.
Because he's what, 5'8"?
Yeah,
maybe
he will be the player that is not a first round player, that is not a quarterback. I'm putting a lot of parameters on this, but you know what I'm going to say. He will be the most discussed, and here's my real prediction, he will be the most mock draft player in football this spring. Everyone's going to want Caden Wettjen on their team.
What the real comp I'm thinking of for him is? Like Khalil Shakir. Like,
yeah.
Like a With snappy, like Shaheed slot speed. Receiver who is just a goddamn nightmare to decide, is he running and is he just running a quick out? Is this an option route or is this an out and up and I'm absolutely screwed trying to cover him? And at the base level, you're going to get a sick punt return.
Yeah. You already have a starter, right? So you can use a top fit. You have a starter at kick and punt return. We'll show the tape here in a minute. Wow. Yep. He was the best player there. Sorry not to to walk all over our man Jalen.
Yeah, so Gilboe had to cover him a few times. He got whooped once, played him well another time. But I thought, just watching him, I thought he was pretty under control. He had a good feel. He had a good way to stay connected. I think the bigger concern with him is going to be speed and like how he tests. I'm not sure he's got speed. And there's a little bit of concern with flat-footedness. I tried to watch him against Ohio State, but Ohio State in that first game was running a dog shit offense and challenged him once. He got beat once by Carnell Tate. The only time he was challenged where Tate just kind of beat him with speed. I thought he caught up well and played through the ball, but Tate made that incredible catch in the end zone.
Yeah,
through contact. I think, to be clear, this is a guy who is going no earlier, I think, than round five, but think he plays the run game well. He has a good level of physicality, played at a real quality program, and I think there's just some IQ stuff that I think he flashed that he stays connected. I like how he runs with guys. I'm a little worried about the speed, but in terms of like a day three guy who, might play well on special teams, again, the testing will determine some of that. I liked what I saw, and I think you can sort of talk yourself into him being like a pretty good backup option at corner, as a rookie.
I had almost the exact same thought with Jaden Kennedy out of Oregon. He had a couple of bad reps. He had a couple of really good ones. In fact, he's the only guy I saw beat Wettjen one-on-one on just a quick slant. But I don't think the speed is going to be there. And, sometimes it doesn't matter, but it probably matters. So there's a lot of corners like that here. It's interesting that you singled out Gilboe because I do think he was probably the best. I liked a lot of the guys here is like super depth pieces. You give them a year.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of corners that I was like, wow, I was super impressed with. I just thought his process was pretty solid.
Right. There's a lot of guys I completely marked off. There's a lot of lines through names. Not
More
a lot
than
of
last
circles
year,
and pluses.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, let me throw you Dante Corleone.
God.
Dante Corleone.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick before Dieter starts. What was the word that I gave you to describe him? Celestial.
Celestial. Beyond magnificent, beyond stallion, he's celestial.
Celestial, like a planet.
Here's all you need to know about Dante Corleone. He refused to be weighed.
Did he?
He's the only guy who didn't get weighed.
Did he really?
Yeah. It's 6 foot flat. Weight NA. Not applicable. Either he broke the scale or he refused to be weighed. Everybody else who was measured in any capacity, by the way, you got your arms, you got your hands, you got all that stuff, refused to be weighed. That's because this dude probably weighs close to 400 pounds. And let me be clear about this. It's all useful. It is. He was absolutely rolling
that
over, dudes.
Unbelievable. No, really. There's a spreadsheet with all the official measurements, and it's got everybody's number, and it literally says not available. He's the only guy who, and it's not like anyone was like, don't measure my arms, don't measure. Like, no. He's like, my weight. Absolutely not.
There's a couple of guys who clearly showed up late. Tristan Lay from Clemson, Chris Hilton from LSU. They don't have any measurements. Dante Corleone is like, I'm not getting on that scale. You don't need to know. That's between me and my wife. I do believe he's a full grown man who's married and has kids. I'm not even half joking about that. One of the reasons that he came back to Cincinnati, he's like, well, that's good money. Like, I got kids.
Wait, real quick. Sorry, yeah. I'm interrupting you again, but say that, you ever seen the U40 football leagues? Like guys who were 38 years old tearing ACLs.
Yep.
There's a little bit of that going on here.
The way I described it to Jake is that there were a lot of yoga pants at the DMV in this Shrine Bowl. And you know what I'm talking about, as my mother so loves to say, yoga pants are a privilege, and that privilege is not being met in many of these places. A lot of spillage, if you will. Maybe they need bigger pants at the Shrine Bowl. There was a lot of that going on. Dante Corleone is perfect as is. We love him. We're body positive towards Dante Corleone. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know if he's an NFL player. I do know that he...
I gotta see him in a training camp, though.
Someone's gonna do it. And he should be playing nose. I think that he actually does have enough pop to play as a one. He dominated. The weirdest part of all of this is I'm saying, I don't know. He dominated. At some point, you're a football player.
It's somewhere between Evan Anderson and the enormous guy who the Buccaneers put on their practice squad, but could never do.
580 pounds.
Desmond Watson.
Yeah, Desmond Watson.
It's somewhere in between that.
This guy can actually play. I cannot express this enough. And you know what? I should have done this with WeChin. Let's just do it now. We're going to pull up the film. Sorry, Jake has a fascinating good dirt some Captain K.
I don't think I have Corleone on here.
Okay, well, that was a complete waste of time. I'm a great director. All right, let's go to another one of your dudes. Actually, no, I'm going to do another dude. Let's talk about
perfect follow-up. Garrett
DiGiorgio out of UCLA. We're going Corleone to DiGiorgio. There was a real flavor to the Shrine Bowl this year.
Hey, the Yorks and DiBartolos somewhere in the Midwest are like, ooh, hey,
okay. I don't think that this guy can play tackle at a real level in the league. His day one reps on one-on-one, he had a little something, and Jake can attest that as I kind of live text him through analysis sometimes, it's all like, I'm so excited. And then an hour later, I'm like, okay, so let's pull all of that back. I was going through it with some centers yesterday, and this guy was kind of in the opposite vein, where it was, okay, you know, you're probably an undrafted free agent. Someone might like your specs, maybe sixth, seventh round, something like that. Then they slid him into guard for day two, and he was working, dudes. And he clearly, and it was weird because I didn't get the sense that it was his, footwork and mobility. It was really more of an arm length thing, even though he has pretty good measurables. I kind of like him. And listen, we're talking day three. Yeah. We're talking late. But I think that as somebody who can just come in, I say he has the wingspan. It's actually only 80-inch wingspan, so it's below average. So guard is definitely the spot. Though I thought he was functional in some of it on tackle. I think this guy at 6'6", 320 pounds, this is somebody who just slides in as your depth guy. This is, okay, you need a spot. You need someone to play guard for a day. Okay, here's your guy. You need someone to slide in and tackle for a couple series. It's not going to be great, but he can do it. You need someone to be a center.
Here, folks. He wears a neck roll.
He wears a neck roll. There were a couple guys who wore neck rolls. Again, a lot of spillage in this this one. It was an aesthetically pleasing Shrine Bowl. I think Garrett DiGiorgio got himself drafted off of his Shrine Bowl practices.
It's hard to ignore a guy out there in a neck roll, DiGiorgio, number 72 out there, and he's just sort of he's playing meaty guard, right? Like, it's not cute technique.
No,
get out in space. It's beef ball, right?
Yeah.
That's what he's playing out there. And I wasn't blown away, but I also kind of liked it. And compared to some other guys where you go, ugh, I was in on it. The other guy on your list, the next IOL, we can get to him and then back to my list. I liked him the best.
You wanted to do Micah Morris? Micah Morris went from day five, day six, round five, round six, round seven guy, just sort of a jag. Draftable because of his pedigree. And coming from Georgia and putting in, you know, solid enough tape, he's a day two guy now. He clearly stands out in a guard class that is lacking, at least from early reps of, you know, film that we've watched so far. I'm not in. Some years you get a couple of guards that you're like, maybe day one. This year, I don't think there is a day one guard. I think that there's maybe two or three day two guards. I think this guy's going to skyrocket up charts.
Yeah, I think the only day one guards, I mean, people are going to say Ioane and someone might do it. I think he's an early round two guy, which is not to even knock him.
He's tough.
I don't think his pedigree's there. I think it would be like Proctor, who honestly I don't think is a round one player off the tape. It's what can you do with him and how much do you trust your line coach to mold him? And does he start at guard? He seems more guardy to me. I liked Morris. I'm not sure he's a day two guy yet, but I think he put in some really good work. And when we show the tape here, there's one against my guy, one of my guys on my list.
Let's just do
Monte
it now.
Capehart. He shuts him down, and I was just impressed. I think he has a really strong base. He's got quick feet. This would be the rep.
So we're looking at
this
here. Is 50, him against 56. Yeah. Against Capehart, who you're about to talk about. Capehart was sunning dudes left, right, and center. And yeah, listen, is it a hold? Probably.
I don't know. Against a guy against guys that are both that wide, I think that's fair.
He was doing that to everybody. He was just doing that to everybody. He just didn't lose reps. He's built right, he's clearly a guard. They gave him a little bit of center work.
Yep.
I think I actually preferred the Oklahoma kid at center, and I definitely preferred the Duke kid at center to him. But he's an interior offensive lineman who I think is going to be a pro for a good long time.
Yep. A lot of the centers are tough because you just see them get sort of moved around in some of those one-on-ones, and that's not really how center works. Number two on my list, Nolan Rucci, who is the brother of the tight end, the 49ers, Hayden Rucci. The Niners picked up Rucci from the Dolphins, I believe. He's a tight end on the practice squad.
Yep.
Nolan Rucci is his brother. Listen, this guy's a little too skinny, but he is quick. He's got really good feet. He's quick with his hands. He's a little too lean for me. He doesn't have sort of the base I want, and he gets sort of pulled away from again at longer reps and has a tendency to overset towards the outside and can get beat inside, and then there's, you know, some holding. But in terms of guys that have like some good footwork, some good length, good feel in terms of like hand placement and the quickness of like resetting their hands, I liked a lot of what he offered. I think he's a guy that can probably move in the run game, which is encouraging. Now, again, this is going back, what, a year or two years now. Mm-hmm. The tackle that the Niners wanted out of Washington, who went to the Ravens. I think it's the right tackle who we thought needed to add weight.
Roger Rosengarten.
Roger Rosengarten, right. There's a little bit of that here. I don't think he is anywhere near the pedigree that we saw with Rosengarten. I don't think he is anywhere near the aggressiveness. But in terms of a guy who like has this sort of mobility that you want, and you say, all right, let's get him in a weight room. Let's add a little bit more to that frame over the course of a year. And by year two, maybe we have a starting tackle. I think he has that ability. And I was encouraged, and I think it was more long-term upside than immediate day one starter.
Yeah, and again, we're talking Shrine Bowl, right? Like, yep. Some guys maybe have that high floor, but typically these are dudes trying to fight their way onto draft boards.
Yeah.
As you can see here, I mean, he looks the part. The feet are good. He does, yeah. He gets out over his skis a little bit. That Duke, the guy from Duke 97 was giving dudes the business. I had him marked down a lot. I didn't feel like he was somebody to take terribly seriously overall. Someone will draft him. Yep. Again, and all these, you know, most of these guys are draftable. It's just a question of can they move themselves up. This is the second tier postseason bowl or preseason pre-draft bowl. You also have to remember, folks, with offensive tackles, there's such a desperation because they just don't make them. They're just not good ones at the college level. And it's a lot like quarterback where they're willing to overlook a lot of stuff and they really don't spend a lot of time on what can't he do. They do just spend time on what can he do. And if you can do stuff like move your feet and you have a good frame, hold on, let me check his wingspan here. These are the other aspects that really matter. If you can do something, they're gonna rock and roll with you. I mean, he is bog standard wingspan, 33-inch arms, 82-inch wingspan. He's 6'8", 310 pounds. He probably needs to put on another 15, but not at the detriment of his feet. And I he's gonna get drafted. And it wouldn't shock me at all with that frame. And with some pretty clean tape at Penn State, which we'll get into a lot deeper here now that we really have him on our radar, wouldn't shock me at all if he moved up and was probably drafted a round or two earlier than anyone expected.
Agreed. I'll get to number three here on my list, Cole Wisniewski, who's a guy a lot of people have sort of surfaced. He was a North Dakota State guy who transferred to Texas Tech, I think it was 2024. A lot of bad safety play, a lot of really, really, you're watching tight ends and running backs just cook some of these safeties. And then I'm watching Wisniewski and he's completely under control. He's long, which I sometimes tend to go with the short, sort of shorter safeties, guys who don't have as much length. I can go either way, but there's a stiffness that taller safeties tend to have unless they're like a blue chip athlete.
You watch a lot of Armani Hooker, and you're like, this isn't for me. Whereas you watch Derwin James, and I know that's apples and oranges, but like, yeah, the little guys usually move more incisively.
Agreed. And Wisniewski, again, there's not a lot of deep safety reps that are useful in these practices. It's a lot of one-on-one stuff, so you're talking about, you know, in the box, post safety at best, but really in the box, plain man. And he was just the calmest guy on the entire field. There's a lot of guys doing TikTok routes. A lot of safeties that are like, okay, moving my feet, keep my feet. And he's just like on top of guys, swatting the ball away, looking very composed, very under control, using that length. Just looks like he's bored, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And I found that extremely impressive.
When you're talking about safeties, it's a very, very difficult position to evaluate. You're looking for guys who are operating at a different speed than everybody else, either physically or mentally. And you can tell mentally because of exactly as you described it. They're not panicked. There's no fake hustle. They just move with a clearness of intention because they understand what's happening. You need that kind of vision and that vision to manifest into movement to play safety at the NFL level. He's not going, it might be too fast for him at the NFL level, but he won't have to catch up much comparatively to so many of his peers who are thinking all the time. They're not instinctual players. And you see that with these one-on-one reps against running backs and tight ends where they're at an inherent disadvantage in those reps, right? Much like the offensive line's at an inherent disadvantage against defensive line in one-on-one. So how quickly can you react, respond, and recover is what tells you a lot. And when you're moving, again, with a clarity of intention, as Mishnewski was, that speaks volumes when everybody else is in a general state of panic. As you know what? They're kind of right to be. Like, this is their future. This is a big job interview, and he's just in there cool, calm, and collected. It says a lot. I want to go back to my guys here real fast.
Yep.
And first off, let's take another moment. We found another clip of Morris here.
Yep.
This is just...
Puts him in the dirt.
Yeah. And again, not bad competition here. Duke 91 had some good reps in this one. This is what he did to everybody. He wasn't my number one guy. He was not my favorite offensive lineman. My favorite offensive lineman in this draft was Emil Wagner, who was a surprise that he went into the draft because I think he's a redshirt junior. I'm sure there was a tremendous amount of money from Notre Dame or somebody else to play another year. And I think that he made the right fiscal decision because he was so good and so dominant that it's kind of impossible to imagine that with his measurables that he's not going to be somebody who has some serious market around him. And let's just watch a rep here.
Nothing. He's looked pretty under control. And again, some of these guys weren't exactly giving him the business, but looked like pretty under control and has like a pretty great frame.
He's 6'5", 302 pounds, so he's going to need to bump it up. But again, plays with good functional strength, 33-inch arms, or 34-inch arms, 83-inch wingspan, big hands, 10-inch hands. He just looked really, really good. There's not a lot of flash, he played both left and right. He's going to be a hot name. I don't need to give more analysis. You're going to get plenty more analysis. He's going to be a hot name. The reason
again, a lot of this stuff where you're watching the Shrine Bowl tape, which is great. It gives you sort of a first glance, a lot of guys where you don't have the testing. You don't have any framework. You're just looking for like what flashes, what do they do against other guys who are all fighting to prove that they deserve to even be an undrafted free agent. Like, you've got guys out here from like Slippery Rock
guy had a tough time.
He had a tough one. It was not ideal. But like everybody out there is like trying to prove something. You're just looking for a flash, looking for something to hold on to. And a lot of guys you cross off your list, which is probably the most useful part of it. You go, oh, no chance. This is not working. It takes more to be like, I should keep an eye on him. And I think that frame and some of the reps from Wagner were really impressive.
Okay. You have
one guy.
One more. Let me get up his film real fast here. Tell me, my friend, about somebody that you have wanted to talk about now for 14 years? Months.
So DeMonte Capehart is someone I fell in love with, I think, in 2023, maybe. And I was just watching film and I went, oh, my God. Because he's going to be a guy we talked about, guys where the all 22 shows you the real truth and guys who are sort of like highlight merchants.
Right.
DeMonte Capehart's going to be a little bit of a highlight merchant. It's going to be a little bit like the guy the Bills drafted who turned out to be a lot better than we expected with the really high pad level, the defensive tackle.
Kentucky.
Yeah, who was like totally a mess, but sort of worked out for them and had some great reps. Yeah. But like Capehart's a guy who is just a beautiful, beautiful rotund nose tackle. You'll see this rep, which is like, okay, but like he just on every rep, there's like you got a lot to deal with.
He's just a loss.
There's some force at point of attack. He's got a low center of gravity. And there's some pad level stuff that like, you know, his pass rush, he's a bagless wonder. Let's be abundantly clear. He is a bagless wonder. But on this rep, you're going to see it from the next angle. He destroys it in the run game right up the middle and then picks the running back up. Look, picks him up, then lightly drops him to the ground. Listen, is he a guy that you should draft in rounds 1 through 3? No. But the second round 4 comes around and you want a guy who is a nose tackle, who is going to eat up space, who may or may not need a lot of coaching to develop and be, and he, I don't think he's going to be a well-rounded player. I'm not sure he's ever going to be an even remotely upside pass rusher, but he's going to eat up space in a way that's going to be, I think, pretty valuable if you can coach him. And I think round four, maybe even round five, I just have been in love with him for 2 years. I think he's a beautiful, rotund specimen who just is going to give you problems up the middle if you're trying to run the ball at him. And I think there's going to be some times where he really destroys plays. And when you watch the tape on him, sometimes you're going to be really disappointed. But there's going to be other times you go, I can't quit him. And he's a guy I just can't quit.
This man goes in to start his career for one thing and one thing only. First down. You just put him on the field on first down and you pray they run inside zone because he wins. He wins. He doesn't have the heavy hands that a CJ West had. He doesn't have the kind of pop off the line that you want from someone who can play the three.
He's a roadblock who just like gets in the way of shit and sometimes blows it up. Technique be damned.
He wins. He wins reps. He wins reps at the point of attack. He eats blocks. He's a good football player. That doesn't mean that he's a valuable part of winning football. And Clemson does produce guys like that. They've produced, when you get the high-end Clemson guys, you're like, oh, those might just be guys who help winning football. But when you think about the low-end Clemson guys, they're all guys who can help win in football. We have buried the lead here a little bit too long. Let's watch Weijin just absolutely cook.
Okay.
These poor, poor, poor Shrine Bowl guys.
Oh, God. The other angle is even, you watch the corner go, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. And Weijin just waits till he panics and goes,
oh,
all
fuck.
Right.
I mean, is it good corner rep? No. Does it matter? No. Here's him against your other guy from Texas. Just, you're done. Bye.
Yeah. And that's not even a terrible rep. I mean, that's kind of an impossible task.
Yeah.
You know, but like, he beats him. He beats him pretty clean. Oh, just, I mean, the way he breaks out of routes, this is one that's, I think, better, and Weijin has to push off at the top.
Yeah. But that was like, as close as anyone got, save for the one Oregon rep on the quick slant. I mean, the first rep you watch of him, it was impossible not to be like, oh, damn. He was so much faster. I'm surprised, actually, you didn't cut that one up. He's so much faster than everybody else. He is going to be the most mock draft player this upcoming spring. That's just where it is. Should we do some questions, Jake?
We should. First of all, Jorge is mad he hasn't gotten a shout out. I apologize.
Is Jorge a seek help?
We will check after this, and if you are Jorge, we will remedy that.
We'll add you to the list.
But we appreciate you, and you're plenty sick enough, and I really do appreciate you.
$5 does get you a shout out. To be fair,
it does. It does. Great comment from Nevin on Bill Belichick. 8 out of 60. He's 133 batting average. Can't let that in. He's only won 8 out of 60 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Benali. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer if his girlfriend was just double her age.
Do they not want her there? Is that the argument?
Well, maybe she gave a presentation. Maybe that's what swayed the votes. Maybe she came in and gave the voters a presentation.
Well, we know that graphic design is her passion.
Awesome. Those, yeah. That's,
yeah. Yeah. Pablo Torre doing the real work.
Anthony Monken definitely told Haslam he could fix Watson, 100% chance. Did he do that in person or was it in his essay? In this essay, I will fix Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, the personality test. You know, what kind of tree would you be?
Shout out all-time grifter Andrew Berry, just all-time.
He lost. I forget the name of the guy who was, who's the Rockies' new GM?
Oh yes. Former Moneyball guy.
Yeah, they had to change his name. It was a whole thing. They lost him, and it's all gone to hell, as if the Browns were operating on high level. This is why ownership matters, folks. We can, and by the way, don't lower the standard because Jimmy Haslam exists. Don't be like, well, it could be Jimmy Haslam. No. There's a standard of ownership that needs to be up there. And, you know, credit to like a Bob Kraft. I don't want to get demonetized, so I won't make my joke. but like Bob Kraft's like, oh, you know, Jared Mayo's, he's our guy. Like I was in the back of a plane with him and I just loved him. And it's just like the most classic owner hubris move. And then after 1 year, he's like, yeah, mess that one up. Let's go get Vrabel. Like, that's good ownership. Even if you do bad, you got it's a lot like offensive line play. How do you respond and recover?
It's all about hiring and like reading people and removing your ego from it, which when you have billions of dollars is tough for folks.
And by the way, Mike McCarthy, fully available to anybody, including the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Not looking hot.
that Pittsburgh Steelers press conference was wild. I couldn't stop watching it because they started off with, oh, you know, my dad would be smiling. We hired a guy from Pittsburgh. And then he is immediately like, well, we didn't hire him because he's from Pittsburgh. And then the rest of the press conference was like, yeah, I love Pittsburgh. I grew up here. It's like,
I just met some people from Pittsburgh and they're like, you got to come. And I'm like, I'm sure it's a nicer
city.
It's
lovely.
Yeah, people make it out to be. And there's like a lot of actually sneaky good Italian and culture. But it's hard for me to go jet setting to Pittsburgh.
No, well, as Joakim Noah once said, no one vacations in Cleveland, and the same could be said for Pittsburgh.
Find myself there on a road trip.
Exactly. Pittsburgh's a wonderful spot. I have nothing but positive things to say about my time in Pittsburgh and the time that I left Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Because
Better odds of hiring Schwartz today than a week ago. Substantially.
Can't divide by zero.
It is... I actually do think this is... to go to sort of what was the Christopher Nolan the nuclear, what was it called, the movie that everyone talked about last year?
Oppenheimer.
Right. It's like
fire. We really should have taken a break.
I have forgotten how to use the English language and have no reference point for culture for last 15 years. Moving on, the point is kinetic chain of things going on here. I think this could lead to Shanahan winning a Super Bowl. I think there is a path where Jimmy Haslam going, we're hiring Todd Monken, leads to that. And there's you know, the pattern. First of all, it starts with Harbaugh being fired, that domino. And you can go even further to all the things that happened, Lamar Jackson's injury.
Are you saying that there was a domino effect and the beginning of a nuclear reaction, the beginning of fission? Was when Loop missed that field goal in week 18.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Correct.
Have you seen
Tyler
the meme?
Loop missing like, that field goal of the dominoes?
Harbaugh fired.
Yes, Tyler
Tomlin
Loop missing
fired.
A field goal. Kyle Shanahan wins the Super Bowl with Jim Schwartz as his defensive coordinator. Yeah. I really think that's a possibility.
It would require him to do some work.
Right. And that's to say, still got to interview him, still have to get him out of the contract, still have to decide to hire him and go beyond their own type, which is to say they have a very specific type, which is the type we know. They run the scheme we know.
Yeah.
Which they would still have to make that decision. I'm just saying there's a path for that to happen now that didn't really exist. And I think Schwartz going, I am so goddamn mad at the Cleveland Browns. I'm going scorched earth on the NFL. I'm teaming up with sort of my nemesis, like a friendly nemesis in a way, in Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. I just think from a schematic standpoint, and I know he's not doing crazy things, there is a level of straightforwardness and pragmatism to the way he runs defenses, but he does have a desire to gut you in the way he coaches defense.
Ravens still without a DC. Well, they have a head coach in Jesse Minter, who's a DC. So, any DC there will be a lackey, if you will, a Kubiak of sorts. Yep.
Question. Jan also says, is he a product of the roster or does he make chicken soup out of chicken shit? Great question.
We definitely know the chicken shit is here.
I think the fact that he has turned, like Myles Garrett is always like a generational player. But like he is clearly maximized that roster. I mean, what Malik Collins did this year, I think is a pretty clear example of he's got talent. And I think I talked about it. You can use him in like, be specific about how you use him, and Schwartz maximized him. He is a pragmatist and he is sharp. I think that's not to say they have a bad roster. There's a lot of talent, yeah, on that defense. I also think he was involved in a lot in identifying what talent would work within that scheme. So I think yeah, that's how I'd answer that.
No, he is of the Steve Spagnuolo mold. He's is one of the best in the game. His schemes have never gotten stale. Yes, he has the talent. He's responsible for the talent, as Jake just said. This is actually the big question from Caden, and I do think that this might be where it all maybe falls apart, and Jim Schwartz says, you know what? I'm just not going to do anything for a year. My wife has been wanting to go to Venice, so we're going to Venice. Caden asks, will he bring his staff over? A part of the reason, and no one's given me pushback on this, a part of the reason that I think the Niners are very hell-bent on continuity is that they believe in Chris Kucerik, and they believe in, they just believe in their defensive assistants. And they've had longtime defensive assistants, and they're not interested in switching those guys up. Whereas if you give a defensive coordinator that isn't Robert Saleh, right? Somebody who was part of their initial hiring process. If you bring
and coming from a little bit of a different framework, just in terms of everything, in terms of style of coaching, in terms of philosophy.
Right, but like Bob Saleh wasn't their first choice the first go around, right?
Right.
And so when they say, hey, we want to hire X, Y, and Z for these position coaches because, oh, my dad knew them and this and that. Yep. Bob Saleh had no power then. He comes back. He's already worked with them, so he knows their value. But it was part and parcel of you're coming back, but we're going to keep these coaches here. That was a selling point, and Bob couldn't really push back on that. He got his say in other ways, like special yep, teams coordinator, draft, all that. Steve Wilks put up no push on that. Was a red flag, actually, in retrospect. Sorensen was never going to because, frankly, he was jumping all of them for the job. And yeah, it will be interesting, and it might be the thing that if they even want to go down this path, which they absolutely should, might be the thing that stops this from happening. I feel yeah, like there is a level of Corleone. Like, I'm not getting on that scale. I don't want to know what the number is.
Right.
They don't want that outside opinion because they might not like what they hear, and that agreed, might be too big of a hit to their ego.
Yeah, and I wonder, the Kucerik thing, I think, would sort of be deciding where, you know, if they got negative feedback on someone like Bullocks or something, particularly in the secondary, and when
they're already trying to fire,
I actually know how to fix your secondary and I need to bring in my own coaches.
Yeah.
I think they might be a little bit more receptive to that. I think it would be interesting if there's a problem with linebackers where they love Johnny Holland and KJ Wright, and up front where it's Kucerik. And if, you know, Schwartz goes, you're actually not running like a viable front. Like, I run the wide nine, but here's how I do it. That could be tricky. And I think that's a monumental question. Again, still have to interview the guy.
Yeah. So, to be fair, I'm just going through, you know, Jacques Césaire is their defensive line coach, clearly pretty good at this. Only a second year with the Browns. So I don't think that that's an impediment. Yeah, linebackers coach Jason Tarver, 6 years with the Browns. He went to Santa Clara, by the way. He did a lot of time with the Raiders. Oh, yeah, I remember that. He was with the Raiders. Did
like a guy like Brandon Lynch, you know? Their yeah, DBs Brandon Lynch coach.
Yeah.
That might be an interesting one.
That and to be fair, they have room. I don't believe that there's a limitation on how many coaches you can have, right?
Like, but you do get a little bit of, if you bring in some coaches with a different philosophy, and, you know, how does that all work?
I'm willing to have those in-house fights.
Benali makes a good point. Kucerik has worked with Jim Schwartz before.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, they run a wide nine. It's just a right, question on, and I have a hard time believing that anyone still running a wide nine doesn't like Chris Kucerik. Like,
I agree.
It might not even be the Kucerik of it all, because I do think that I've never heard anyone say a bad word about Chris Kucerik unless all think he's very good at his job, and people keep hiring his assistant away. I just think there's a question about the wide nine, which Jim Schwartz clearly doesn't have a question with. So if you need someone to coach the wide nine, I think Kucerik's probably one on the list for anybody.
I think it's the Niners secondary. I think if Schwartz was going to bring in anyone and shake it up, I think he'd say, listen, the front's fine. I know Kacerik. We work together. Like, Johnny Holland's a legend for linebackers, and KJ Wright is a knowledgeable guy.
Yep.
I think the secondary is a place where you go, you guys really don't specialize in that. You haven't had sort of elite minds in the secondary. No. I mean, Ray Brown is a guy, DB's cornerbacks, was like a big – they brought him in last year, big proponent of Upton Stout, Marquis Siegel, and Bullocks is sort of in charge there. I think that's an area where it's like, if he's going to bring in anything there, I think they might have a little bit of leeway and consideration with that group. If there's going to be a spot where he says, I got to bring in my own guys.
I'm just looking at the staff right now. I actually don't see Bullocks on the staff. I don't think he's employed by now. Am I missing something on the 49ers staff page?
No, I don't see him on there either.
See him on there either. I missed that one. That's really interesting. Huh. Huh.
Whoa.
Things in motion.
You're right. You're right.
Things in motion.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess teams do update that consistently. I mean,
they already have Monken as the head coach of the Browns. I was just on the page.
Right.
I mean, this is pretty well updated. I mean, I presume he's out of contract, but
Yeah, Saleh's gone.
Yeah.
That is strange. That is strange that he's not listed there. I'm not going to try and extrapolate anything, but Daniel Bullocks is not listed.
He's not currently employed by the San Francisco 49ers, according to the San Francisco 49ers.
And maybe, you know what? You know what? They did interview.
They did.
That was the only request they've made so far. Is for the Falcons safeties / DBs coach for a lateral move, which is the only thing that they have not, that they would have. And maybe it's Bullocks leaving with Saleh, and that's what that is. And that's been confirmed but not announced. Maybe that's what that is.
Well, they already have Steve Jackson hired as their secondary safeties coach.
But that's interesting. Yeah, he's not listed.
He's not listed. I couldn't tell you where he is. They have a lot of coaches already for the Tennessee Titans. He got that staff together fast. He's got Matt Jones as an offensive assistant. They don't have Dable up there right now. They still have Nick Foles.
I think it would make sense if Bullocks is leaving with Saleh.
I don't know what role he'd have. It looks like their defense is pretty well stocked.
Or he goes to the Jets or something. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So again, the impediment of, hey, bringing in your own secondaries coach, not an impediment, according to the official Niners coaching roster.
That is interesting. He really is not listed there, and that's the only guy that has not.
Yeah, I'm surprised that no one texted me about that. Maybe they didn't know. They've been keeping it pretty buttoned up.
Maybe he'll coach corners for Saleh. Other than that, I can't.
Yeah. Well, fascinating stuff.
Last thing, last comment.
Yeah.
Niners need a disruptor. Jorge, I think the obvious answer is, like, you can go, oh, yeah, gap-splitting defensive tackle. But, like, you know, another answer you could have, thank you for putting the QR code if you're not a subscriber to the Hutch Report. The other answer you could have is you can disrupt the game in a lot of ways. And slot corner or safety, Swiss Army knife, is kind of where my head goes in terms of how the league is evolving. Obviously, McDonald has maximized that. Yep. But I do think, like, Upton Stout's a good nickel. He's not a paradigm-shifting player. Yeah. I still think...
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Maybe he proves to be that. But I think, like, if there's a guy with size and athleticism at safety, even if it's like Emanuari was, where you go, I don't know what he is. I don't know what this is. That's something that I think you have to do due diligence and really consider. Is this the thing that you have to add to your scheme to make it viable in, you know, 2026?
There's no sacred cows in the secondary right now.
Yep.
There just isn't. And frankly, there's not that many on the defensive roster in whole. It's Fred, it's Bosa, it's Michael. You know, you could, I guess Collins has to be there because of the draft pick premium.
Yeah.
But I don't think Lenore's sacred. I think
Collins, by the way, shoulder surgery. So like, you can't bet that he's going to be 100% at the start of the year or whatever.
And we'll fix the 49ers like so again much, in a couple weeks.
He's still so much room that he needs to improve. Like, he wasn't that impressive last year. He had some really key moments, but he's still a huge project.
Yeah. So there's no, it's young, it's malleable. Malleable might not be the best characteristic because it means that they haven't defined themselves as quality enough to where now you just have to hope that they can change. But listen, they have been handed, to sum this all up from the initial point of the show, they have sat their ass down and had fate come to them with just an incredible gold-plated platter of opportunity. Just here you go. It's right there. All you have to do is reach out and take it. And they would be well served to just go out there and take it. I see no reasonable impediment to doing so, but it still has to be done. And I'm curious on if they will end up actually doing it.
I am too. Before we get out of here, if you are not subscribed to the Hutch Report, subscribe.
I will be
getting to my beautiful, beautiful voiceovers.
Yeah.
As we watch film together, and we'll go through it together, and I'll tell you what I like, what I don't like,
yep,
things I'm curious about, things I don't know at this stage of the process, but I'll bring in behind the Iron Curtain. I don't know why I called it the
wow.
Iron Curtain.
Okay. Gorbachev.
I did take a Russian art history class, and that was formative.
I do not like the concept of an iron curtain going on there. I mean, it's a paywall, but I wouldn't call it an iron curtain.
It's a loose curtain. It's a sturdy curtain.
Chainmeal.
All right.
Okay. Bye.